他看什么是选举逻辑，他那些学习好的，从上一学的那过来，是吧？
从吃的从鱼吃那嘛，小酒坊的大米开始吃，现在已经做几位做南极，做了很久三个主播秀。从鱼吃那嘛，小酒坊的大米开始吃，现在已经做几位做南极，做了很久三个主播秀。托给车南拉抢求跑走的你给手机打给就说给别说难做了很久三个就把手
我在那是选举多久他选举是他看的这方面长期给他们等等丰富长期给他们意思我比他们这个等等多的等等长期给送下给他们该用的嘛对我应该等等送给他们等等送决心等等送决心老婆送老婆送决心等等送我等多嘛长期给送下给该他们老等等送给他们决心什么的
So we can say that these 10 chapters on the Guide to a Bodhisattva's Way in essence contains the essence of the three vast collections of the Buddha's teachings, the Vinaya collection of teachings, the Sutra collection of teachings, and the Abhidharma collection of teachings. These three baskets or the vast collections of teachings which bear three main subjects and three main forms of training. So in these three vast collections, you have the entire, teachings of the Buddha.
What the Chananda, the Nathan was Maji Kathmaji Gunde is, the way is, he nana two that do the dinagi, the way is, what is, what the moon was.
Even though in one way we can say, the Guide to a Bodhisattva's way of life, these 10 chapters are in essence, what is explained in these three vast collections of teachings, but in particular then it is attributed as a commentary to the sutra collection of the teachings. I think I turned it on. It doesn't have a battery, I think.
Oh, it does. This is the low battery here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
That rubber, did not the rubber was on a Shiba than a Bosmolo tomorrow, he says. Shiba Layon, Sujin, Tanting, and Zidon, Shiro Lover, you say, number that you are. That number is happy lovers. Happy lovers, happy Sujin lovers. 사비 등연지 질러봐 사비 싫어 질러봐 단 나주 노아지는 매번 주 주지지 못이시 나스 단 수대가 동바지 다 주지지 질러봐 맹주가 삼비신 바꾸어 이다 안내 맹주가 삼비신비 주지인데 싫어버리 사비 주지지 사비 주지지 질러봐 안내 전화지 사비 등연지 질러봐 사비 싫어 질러봐
So these three forms of training in ethics, training in concentration, training in wisdom, is not just unique to Buddhism alone. Many non-Buddhist traditions also, uphold such as these forms of training in ethics, in concentration, and in wisdom. But to differentiate itself from our non-Buddhist trainings, then you say we call it three higher forms of training: higher training in ethics, higher training in concentration, and higher training in wisdom. The reason why we say, what sort of makes it a higher training in the context of the Buddhist training is because, for example, if you take the Vinaya teachings, you know, the on an ethical discipline, the training in ethical discipline or morality, which is based on the, you know, which sort of which is like the kind of the main body of our vows of individual liberation, you know, the pratimoksha vows or the vows of individual liberation, all of those vows then is founded on the Vinaya collection of teachings, or, you know, the collection of teachings explaining moral discipline, and all these trainings which sort of protect us from transgressions, so are rooted in the motivation of renunciation, the determination that which is definitely intent on attaining liberation. So because one's training in these higher forms of ethics is grounded or founded on this renunciation, you know, the determination to definitely attain liberation, so we see this kind of ethical training is of a higher category as opposed to any training in ethics. And likewise, you know, training in concentration, training in wisdom, which is also present in other non-Buddhist traditions, but why we differentiate the Buddhist training as being of a higher kind is because the training in ethics and the training in wisdom has as its focal point, emptiness, which you do not find in other non-Buddhist traditions. So for these reasons, then we call the Buddhist training in concentration and wisdom as a higher training because of its focus being emptiness. You have these three subject matters of these three vast collections of teaching, these three subject matters relating to these three higher forms of training. So why do we have these three higher forms of training? It's because in Buddhism, then the practitioner is required to overcome or abandon these two types of obscurations, the obscuration of our afflictions and the obscuration to knowledge or obscuration to omniscience. So since we need to abandon these two types of obscurations, then we need these three higher forms of training to enable us to do this. So if you make a comparison, then it's like just like a person having a strong vital body, then the training in higher ethics compares to that, and then not only having a good body, then having arms that are strong, you know. So that is like the higher training in concentration, the concentration that which is focused on the subject, which is emptiness. And then if this strong arms, you know, attached to a strong body, then held a very sharp axe, then it is able to cut off that particular tree. So just like this analogy, then like the strong body, like the strong arms, like the, you know, very sharp axe to cut that tree, then the strong body is like the training in higher morality, ethics, and the And the strong arms are like the training in higher concentration, and the sharp axe is like the training in a higher wisdom. So the combination of these, then just like in the case of the example, the individual is able to cut through the trunk of that whatever broad tree, thick tree. So in the same way, you know, these three higher forms of training then is what enables us to abandon the two types of obscurations. When we differentiate I and others, when you talk about I and my mind, like we differentiate a subject and object like that. When we investigate the I, then from a non-Buddhist perspective, then usually the aggregates are seen to be something. The aggregates and the I are seen to be something, two different things. The I seem to be something completely different, apart from the aggregates. Take the example of a person and the bag that the person is carrying. They are two different things. So in the same way, from a non-Buddhist perspective, then the I is seen as something distinctive, something other than the aggregates. And how they see the I is something that which is permanent in the sense that it is non-momentary, and that it is completely independent because it does not depend on causes and conditions, and that it is a single entity because it does not depend on parts. So this is how they see the I, as something other than the aggregates, permanent, independent, as a single entity like that. So something that which is completely apart from the aggregates. That is the kind of the I that they behold when they investigate what the I is.
Pumbul 내가 니가 룰루 쉐이 바데 네 넘버 30 어레 따지로 맞이 다 들어가 내가 룰루 쉐이 바데 넘버 30 도다 뭐 참바 참아 주면 좀 말베 제가 뭐 너도 봐 생각 뭐 엄마 봐 참아 주면 시 가자 가자 통과서 챙기면 준비 가자 좀 제가 내가 룰루 쉐이 바데 참아 룰루 쉐이 바데 공부를 세님은 준비 다 주요 말이에요. 다 공부 있으네. 공부를 엄마 좋아하면 아저씨 우리 제자들 다들 시대 뭐 가지게 주셔서 그 말이야. 가지 드니 신이 있다마다 라수 주면 받아 주셔야 돼. 가지 내시라 뭐 가지게 땀마다 받아 주셔야 되는데 라자 두비 저 다 주셔서 두스. 시대 뭐 대바 주지는 나 먹고 들었어. 먹고 들었어 나 여러. 그 되게 공부를 어느 조합이 간접적으로 지역이 다시고 그래서 공부도 생님이 지역이 다시고 말인데 공부를 어느 조합이 간접적으로 지역이 다시고 그래서 그게 시라 마와 가지 주세요 먼저 좀 해서 보세요
so
아 그래
so all of the Buddhist philosophical schools there are four main Buddhist philosophical schools or tenets so they all negate the idea of an I which is completely apart from the aggregates, that which is, you know, permanent, you know, independent and a single entity. This, all of the four Buddhist schools negated, refuted. And then you have the assertion of an I which is, which controls the person, which is like the king over the person, what is this person, a self-sufficient, substantially existent person, and a person which, you know, totally has this control over such a person. You know, that which is self-sufficient and substantially existent. And then you have an I, which is like the king controlling this person. So this version of a self or a person is again accepted by, within the four Buddhist tenets, the lowest school, which is known as the Vaibhashikan school. In amongst them, there are many sub-schools. Then some of the sub-schools, they accept the existence of an I or a self of a person, which is self-sufficient and substantially existent. But they do not accept a person whose characteristics does not accord with the aggregates. But the rest of the other, Buddhist tenets do not accept such a self of a person, which is self-sufficient and substantial existence. It's just some of the schools of the Vaibhashikans, they are like this group of five of them are the only ones who accept it. So, you know, such perceptions are regarded as, you know, again, lokshins, wrong consciousness.
Lulu Shi but Shida Ma Machavadan, Dude Badan, Sendan Badan, Uma but Tanji Lulu Shi it is.
So those who propound such an I, which commands such an aggregate, an I which is self-sufficient, substantially existent, which commands such an aggregate. It's regarded as a wrong consciousness by most of the Vaibhashikan schools, as well as the South Tantrican schools, such as well as the Chittamatran schools, as well as the Madhyamikan schools. All of them apart from a very small group of Vaibhashikans, all of them regard this viewpoint as a completely, wrong consciousness. So this mode of grasping at the self of a person, which is a self-sufficient and substantially existent, is regarded actually as the root of us, a viewpoint which acts as the root of cyclic existence. And this is regarded so by all of the, the major schools, including the majority of the Vaibhashikans, as well as the Sautantikins, Chotamatrins, Smartikins, all regard this viewpoint as a viewpoint which is the basis of the root of samsaric existence. And it is said that all the Chittamatran schools and below, with the exclusion of the Madhyamikins and Swatantrikin Madhyamikins, with the exclusion of these schools, then they say that if you are able to get rid of this view, which is the view grasping at the at the self of a person, which is self-sufficient and substantially existent, if you get rid of this view, then if you are able to abandon this view, then you attain the state of an arhant. You attain the state of a four destroyer, meaning you destroy delusions and its action karma and its result suffering. So, in accordance with these, what is known as treasury of knowledge and compendium of knowledge, these are in the cast of these two texts, then they say that being able to abandon this mode of grasping this mode of grasping at the self of a person, which is self-sufficient, substantially existent, and if you abandon this, you become an arhant. For the reason that you abandon delusions, thereby the karma, thereby the suffering. So this is what is stated in the class of these two scriptures, the compendium of learning and the treasury of knowledge states like this. But the other schools, like the Prasangika Madhyamika system, they say that whatever arhant has been asserted from these scriptures are not real arhants. The reason why is because they still have delusions. The reason why they they have delusions is because they have the causes for delusions. Why do they have causes for delusions? It's because they have the grasping at true existence, grasping at the true existence of phenomena. And so because of that, they still have the causes for delusions. For example, they have the attachment to the feelings of pleasure, and because this acting as a condition, then you have the grasping toward that true existence of it, and so therefore you have delusions. So from a Prasangika Madhyamika system, then they say whatever state of an arahant has been asserted from the viewpoint of these two texts, then are not arahants. So this point is mentioned in some of the later chapters of the Guide to a Bodhisattva's Way of Life, that when you have reaction to feelings of pleasure and pain, the attachment to feelings of pleasure or the aversion to the feelings of pain, then accordingly, then you generate attachment or aversion. And so, since you have yet to abandon the grasping of true existence, so you have the attachment. So, although in their cases, even though you do not have some gross manifestation of these delusions, but you have yet to get rid of these delusions, these afflictions. And so for this reason, it is stated that, the state of arhats that are asserted from the treasury of knowledge and from the point of view of the, compendium of learning, from these two texts, whatever states of arhats are asserted are not real arhats. All the schools below So all of the schools below Swatantrikan Madhyamikans all assert that a person's grasping at a self of a person which is self-sufficient, substantially existent, is the root of samsaric existence, and that if you abandon this, then you become an arhant. But from the viewpoint of the high school, which is the Prasangika Madhyamika system, then they say this is not the root of samsaric existence. What is the root of this view of holding a person's existence as being self-sufficient, substantial, is not the root of self-existence. It has to be grasping a true existence, you know, is that is the root of a true existence. And therefore, you know, from the viewpoint of the treasury of knowledge, whatever state of our hand is said to be so just by abandoning this grasping at the self of a person's self-sufficient, substantially existent, is not an arhant. So from the viewpoint of the highest philosophical school's thought, which is the Prasangika Madhyamika system, what it says is that all phenomena is established on the basis of its imputation all coming together. And on the basis of this, then whatever you impute is there to it. You know, it's what are the aggregates? The aggregates are the mere collection of the elements. You know, and that there is no aggregate which exists independently. If it exists independently, then it has to be, truly existent. So therefore, when we often recite the Heart Sutra, we say there is no form, no feeling, no smell, no taste, no touch. In that way, we are not saying that there is no conventional existence of these. We are not saying there is no relative existence of such form. What we are saying is there is no form or no smell or no taste or no touch, that which is truly existent, that which is independently existent. How they exist is on the basis of the basis of imputation coming together, the mere collection of the basis of imputation coming together, and are imputing a label. You know, it is on the basis of these kind of dependence you have the existence of a form. You know, the whatever form or whatever smell or whatever taste we label, it is just a mere label on the basis of its imputation, a mere label designated upon the mere collection of the basis of imputation. And so, you have that kind of dependent existence rather than any kind of independent existence of a form or a smell or touch or taste. You know, if it were independently existent, then it would have to be truly existent. So in this way we say, the I or the self of a person exists independent upon the basis of imputation, which are these aggregates. That I exists as a mere label, which is designated on the basis of imputation, which are these aggregates, which are these five aggregates. So, So therefore, you know, there is no I which exists independently or without depending on its causes and conditions. So there is an I which exists through dependence, and you know, there is no I which exists independently, or truly existent I.
Or the
first and foremost, we have this grasping at the I as being independent. And so this mode of our apprehension of the I as being independently existent is in fact our mode of grasping at the truly existent I, which is therefore a completely wrong consciousness. This is equivalent to, you know, our mistaking a coiled strapped rope in a very poorly lighted area as being a snake. So our mode of apprehension of this I as being independently existent, which is, you know, grasping at the I as being truly existent, is as good as our mistaking a coiled strap rope as being a snake. So because we have this grasping at the I as being truly existent, so when we go through pleasures or pain, then many afflictions arise in relation to the happiness we experience, in relation to the pain that we go through. Then our mode of grasping at the I as being truly existent is what generates all these afflicted states of the mind with the experiences that we go through. And with these, when these afflictions arise, when these delusions arise, then we accumulate the karma. And because we accumulate the karma, then we have the result of samsaric existence. Our mode of grasping at phenomena as being truly existent, which is grasping at true existence, is regarded as the obscuration of our afflictions, obscuration of our delusions. And so, not only do you have the obscuration of these delusions, but you also have the imprints of these delusions, which are classed as obscuration to omniscience, or obscuration to knowing. So, in the case of the arhants, they are able to abandon the obscuration of delusions, but have been unable to abandon the imprint of these obscuration of delusions, which is the obscuration to omniscience, obscuration to knowledge. So therefore, in the case of the individuals who are training in the individual vehicle or the Hinayana vehicle, then we say they have abandoned grasping at true existence. which is the obscuration of afflictions. But they have yet to abandon the imprints of it. And so because they have yet to abandon the imprints, they have yet to actualize the all-knowing, omniscient state of Buddhahood. In the case of the or the arhats of the individual vehicle, itinerary vehicle, the fact that they have yet to abandon the obscuration to knowledge or omniscience, even though they have abandoned all delusions and grasping at true existence, the obscuration of our afflictions. They have abandoned all this, but they have yet to abandon the imprints of these. What is the sign of that? Is that when they come to they have some very playful nature. They have a very playful nature to them. Playful nature to them, and when things go wrong, then they have a tendency to not take responsibility for it. So in the sense, it's saying that it's not me, it's somebody else, kind of like that. So those are some of the the signs of having not abandoned the imprints of afflictions, obscuration of delusions. Another point to show the difference between like having abandoned just only the obscuration of afflictions and not having abandoned the obscuration to knowledge or omniscience You can think about the event that took place during the lifetime of the Buddha. There was one householder by the name of, I don't know the Sanskrit name, but his Tibetan, we call him Kindapeki, you know. And so he was like 80 years old, and, you know, he was having an extremely difficult time with his family. So, you know, the difficult time that he was having with his family caused him to have renunciation, generated, had the effect of giving rise to renunciation in his mind, and so he decides to become ordained. And so he came to Shariputra and to ask for ordination. And, you know, Shariputra is like is a Hinayana Arhant, and, you know, through his clairvoyance, he saw that this householder did not have the roots of virtue to become ordained. Roots of virtue for liberation, it says. Shariputra refused ordination, saying that he didn't have the roots of virtue to be ordained, because, you know, at that time they look with clairvoyance to see if that. So then when he heard that, he was so disappointed, you know, like he was having such a hard time at home, and it caused him to have renounced it. When he came to get ordained, he didn't have the merits for that. So he thought, you know, it's best that I just, commit suicide. So he went to die. So he went to kill himself. And when that happened, then the Buddha came Buddha said, "What are you doing?" And then he told that, you know, it's a very desperate story. And then the Buddha said, no, you do have the roots of virtue to get ordained. And so the Buddha ordained him, and he became an Arhant in that very lifetime. So I'm just saying, like, you know, you can see, why was Shariputra not able to see that root of virtue in him? Mm-hmm. You know, it's because of not having abandoned the obscuration to omniscience. But, for an enlightened mind who has overcome that kind of, obscuration to knowledge, then is able to see much more. So, you know, to abandon grasping at true existence, and to abandon the obscuration of our afflictions, our delusions, for this you don't need bodhicitta. To abandon the imprints of our delusions, you know, the obscuration to knowledge or obscuration to omniscience, for this you definitely need bodhicitta, besides the wisdom realizing emptiness.
So therefore, in
training in bodhicitta, you often have training in conventional bodhicitta and training in ultimate bodhicitta. Because without the training in the scope of both of these two bodhicittas, there is no way to abandon the two types of obscurations, of afflictions and and its imprint, which is the obscuration to knowledge. So the conventional bodhicitta is the is the bodhicitta that that we normally, you know, aspire to generate. The ultimate bodhicitta is the bodhicitta, you know, which is supported by or sustained by the wisdom, exalted wisdom, directly realizing emptiness. So that is the you know, the kind of the wisdom, direct realization of emptiness on the path of seeing, on the path of meditation, on the path of no more learning. So it is this you know, ultimate bodhicitta which enables us to abandon the obscuration, obscuration to knowledge, or obscuration to omniscience. So therefore, we say that these two bodhicittas, the conventional and ultimate bodhicitta, you know, compares to being like the pair of the wings of a bird that enables this bird to cross over the vast oceans. So it is with the generation of conventional bodhicitta in our mind, and you know, conjoined with the practice of the ultimate bodhicitta, which is you know, realizing emptiness, that you train in the Mahayana path, the Mahayana path of accumulation of merit, preparation, seeing, meditation, and no more learning, and in this way, you attain the fully completed state of Buddhahood, as it is stated within the mantra, Tayata Gati Gati Paragati Parasangati Bodhisoha.
That Timel, Chibun Tin Chazawa, Yinata, Nanjo Samadha, Tony to be Shiro Kumala Tene, and the Rani Chibi Shiro, Tabatunjo Sambe, and Nanjo Samadha, Tony to be Shiro Kumala, and then Timel Cholan, Jolan, Tongula, Mulula, Madra, Tayata Gati Gati Paragati, Parasangati Bodhisoha, Timel Java, you know what the matter.
So, with regards to the practice of an individual of a middling capacity, you know, who just generates renunciation, which is the determination, which is intent on seeking liberation, and with this renunciation, then meditates on cultivating the wisdom, realizing emptiness, to attain his or her own individual liberation. So this kind of path then is an individual vehicles, is a Hinayana's path of accumulation of merit, preparation, seeing, meditation, and no more learning like that. So you can relate the Tayata Gati Gati Paragati Parasangati to reflect a Hinayana, you know, the five paths of a Hinayana, which is rooted in the individual's renunciation to attain his or her own individual liberation, and thereby engages in a practice to realize emptiness. So when we look at the 10 chapters of the Guide to a Bodhisattva's Way of Life, you can see that the first 7 chapters, teaches us conventional bodhicitta, and the 8th and the 9th chapter teaches us, ultimate bodhicitta, absolute bodhicitta, because, in focusing on emptiness, then it trains us to cultivate a concentration and a special insight focusing on emptiness. So you can see these two chapters then teaches us, you know, absolute bodhicitta. So then now we go back to the text and go through the text, stanzas of the text. When Gyaltsenji, whose commentary we are relying on, then presents the when presenting the commentary to the Guide to a Bodhisattva's Way of Life, then he presents it under these four headlines, which is explaining the meaning of the title, the homage of the translator, which are, and the meaning of the main subject matter, and the meaning of the conclusion. So in Sanskrit, the title is known as the Bodhisattva Charya Avatara, you know. Since anyway most of the Tibetans don't speak or read Sanskrit, why would they include the Sanskrit title of the text? So the reason behind that is for us to create an imprint toward this language. Then people put the title of the original text. So what's the reason for us to accumulate imprint of these Sanskrit names of such texts as these? Why accumulate such an imprint with such a language? Is because it is said that in this fortunate eon that there will be 1,000 Buddhas who will manifest their enlightenment in the Arya land of India. Of course, there are countless Buddhas, but 1,000 of them will manifest their enlightenment, and all of them, when they turn the wheel of Dharma, one of the major languages that will be used in turning the Dharma is Sanskrit. And so even though in this fortunate eon we did not have the karma to directly meet with the actual Buddha when he taught the Dharma, but another way to accumulate the merit is to through accumulating such as these imprints, and that when such an occasion were to befall us, then that we may experience the ripening of such as these imprints that we have accumulated.
Mm-hmm. 개바 담보에 되는 아 하도 메다고 사교 주석이 사교 주석이 근데 개바 담사하고 초나로를 모두 동사하는 거 아 모두 동지 사용 되는 사교 주석이 다 개바 담보도 개바 들 사지 동배들 모두 동대 사지 동배 맞대 근데 하도 개바 담보 메다고 해서 나도 개바 담보 개선 사지 동사로 메다고 되는 거 아
Why do we call, how did this name of the fortunate eon came about? Is because it was said that, some of the devas, the celestial beings, when this world was being formed, they say, a thousand lotuses blossomed, and they took that to signify that a thousand Buddhas would manifest in this world, and so they made this comment that this is a fortunate eon for a thousand Buddhas will come. So that is how in the term of the fortunate eon came about, from the phrase used by these devas.
So
up until now, four Buddhas, the first four Buddhas of the thousand eon of the thousand have already, come and gone, such as, I don't know the Sanskrit names, but in Tibetan we say Kowajik, Sertup, Hirsung, and then Shakyamuni Buddha are the four Buddhas. So you have 996 more Buddhas to come.
So even though
in this life, if we didn't get to become an arhant or didn't get to become enlightened by studying the Dharma of Guru Shakyamuni Buddha and being, by accumulating strong imprints of such training, such learning, then when the later Buddhas come, then we have greater chance to accomplish these goals. So these are the benefits.
So
if you take the etymology of the word bodhi reflects awakening, sattva as in mind, sattva, charya as in conduct, avatara means engaging. So this is how the title and name of the title is, the meaning of the title is explained. And then the first stanza 1a, which says, respectfully, I prostrate myself to the Sugatas who are endowed with the Dhammakaya. So this verse actually is the translator's homage.
That
So in Tibet, in the early years, we had these what are known as religious kings or Dharma kings. You had a series of them, but the ones that are most well known are Sonsen Gampo, you know, who is regarded as an emanation of Avalokiteshvara, who during his time built the Jokhang, that's the main temple in Lhasa, you know. And then you had Thussen Desen, who is regarded as the emanation of Manjushri, and who during his time established the first monastery of Samye. And it was also during the time of Thussen Desen who sent many, many young Tibetans across to India to study Pali, Sanskrit, like that. You know, some of the best scholars of that time were sent across to India. And it was during Thussen Desen's time when these students took on the responsibility of translating all the Kangyu, the entire collection of the teachings of the Buddha were translated into Tibetan. So you had this many of these groups of students that study both Sanskrit and Pali, and then you have these 108 volumes of the Kangyu, which are the collection of the Buddha's teachings, words of the Buddha. And then you have the third king, Ngata Thiravachan is the third king. He is regarded as the emanation of Vajrapani.
So
it was during the time of Thussen Desen, who is regarded as the emanation of Manjushri, who built the Samye, the first monastery in Tibet, he invited the great abbot and the great scholars like these Indian masters, Shanti Rakshita, Kamala Shila, establishing the monastic order, establishing the study of Buddhism in the way in which it is preserved today in this kind of vibrant debate. That is how, by debating whatever subjects of the Dharma that was taught, that is how they studied. So you have the great abbot of Shantarakshita, you have the great Kamalashila, as well as the great Indian master Pema Sambhava, were all invited during the time of King Thussen Desen. So, it was this king who established the roots. And of course, it wasn't like, that the scholars at that time, did everything at that time. It took many generations, but he set the foundations for it. And so it was out of his works that you have all the translations of the Dharma, the actual word of the Buddha, as well as the Tengyu, which are all the commentaries by the great Indian masters. Because Shanti Rakshita himself came from the great Indian monastic university of Nalanda, so he re-established in Tibet whatever was the system existing in Nalanda.
Хоче дати до санче та дуже батаже на часу до дяби кайс. Дати до бежи чуже сонтан кому тузон дежево. Тузон дезенген лотова бету дуле. Дяби бегу жуче дене ру тоне грес. Дю дене маби дене дуде дене ру. Мату биче до. Анан дуде дене инам душа пеле санче та жажу сен батаже на часу ло си дугу гуйс. Вот это там чего имеется. Дяби кайс там чего имеется. And the movie that they're in a Yabeldra. And you don't know in a Tajin Chamber of Shazalos. What's the Maturi Jeto? You shall do so to the Kurgus, Yabikaim.
And it was the then king Tsundesen's decree that, you know, when the translators undertook any kind of works of translation of the original Indian text, that you know that there should be no mix up of the texts with regards to which category they belong to, which of the three baskets, which of the three patakas they belong to, and it, you know, the title had to from the very outset the title had to clearly define which of the three baskets or which of the three vast collections the particular texts belong to. So therefore, under his decree, then whenever the whenever they were translating a text belonging to the category of the sutra, they had to pay their homage to all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. So when the translators' homage began with the prostrations to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, then it was understood it belonged to the sutra collection. And then when a text was in the Abhidhamma collection, then the translator's prostration began to Manjushri, so they knew it belonged to that, the treasury of knowledge. If it was to do with the Vinaya collection of the teachings of the Buddha, then the translator's homage or prostration was directed to the All-Knowing One. So by the titles, right away, people knew which of the three baskets their teachings belonged to, and so that was that was under the decree of that particular king. Another meaning behind undertaking such a homage before beginning any kind of work like this is that it is by offering such prayers of homage, then it removes the obstacle to completing the work, and the ultimate objective is for the works, for the merits of such works to become the cause for enlightenment.
That in my little
So here you have to first respectfully I prostrate myself to the Sugatas who are endowed with the Dharmakaya as well as to their noble sons, which is Bodhisattvas, and to all who are worthy of veneration. And then here I shall explain this part is that, again, from Shantideva directly from the... here I shall explain how to engage in the vows of the Bodhisattva son, the meaning of which I have condensed in accordance with the scriptures. So this is also, you can say, is the, the 1B is like the it's like the author's pledge. Pledge to the composition.
That this is Chujikuma, say J dance, this is another Sanji Zumba, this is another Sanji.
And So you can you say sugatas are the, referring to the ones gone to bliss, referring to the Buddhas, noble sons being that being the bodhisattvas, and in the class of to all those who are worthy of veneration, then or you know referring to all of one's spiritual teachers, and then the next stanza 1b is like. I shall explain how to engage in the vows of the Buddhist sons in this verse. Then you can consider it as the author's pledge to the commitment of the composition.
That deshi chuju kumas deshi is na kala kumas na deshi chuju kumas na that sajatobe ane namu chuju chuju senji par kewa thama chusa ne sanji oru nyomo kana shiji deva malu bapumba. She did about the young,
So when you talk about respectfully, I prostrate myself to the Sugatas, meaning the ones gone to bliss. Gone to bliss, how do you go to that state of bliss? You go to that state of bliss by initially generating the bodhicitta, and having generated the bodhicitta, then accumulating the three countless eons of merit, you know. So it is through that then you become endowed with the truth body, the Dhammakaya. You actualize that body, that state of the truth body, because you are able to abandon the obscuration of delusions and the obscuration to knowledge of omniscience. So, Dhammakaya, in other words, is the state of the omniscient state, the all-knowing state is the Dhammakaya. So you can also say, you can talk about three types of kayas or four types of kayas in holy, three types of holy bodies or four types of holy bodies. When we talk about the three, then it is the truth body, the perfect enjoyment body of the Buddha, and the emanation body. When we talk about the four holy bodies of the Buddha, then the truth body is subdivided into two, which is the exalted wisdom body and the Buddha's body of nature. And then you have the body of perfect enjoyments and emanation body, so they make up the four Buddha bodies. Also, you can talk about the two Buddha bodies. How do you have the two bodies? Is it because of the basis, which is the true truths, relative existence, you have conventional truths. Because of the basis of ultimate existence, absolute existence, you have the absolute truth or ultimate truth. And because of these two bases of the two truths, relating to the conventional and relating to the absolute, then you have a path consisting of the method and the wisdom. And because you have a path consisting of the method and wisdom, you actualize the result of the two bodies, the truth body and the form body, the Rupakaya and the Dhammakaya.
अने सांझी के तोजी ची थांजी चंबा कर सकोले वो जेल तोबा देशी कुंबा देशी चेचु सोंदे ही तोबा देशी चेचु सोंदा दे मतलब इस चेचु सोंदे सांझी के तोजी कुंबा देखे अने न्योमो का देशी जब लेबा कुंबा दे इस लेबा कुंबा मालूबा कुंबा सब मधुबा वो लेबा कुंबा से ना 치료받으게 지구원에 그런 유지 받으받으 공화요 때 먼저 와서 공부를 마주 자와 사변에 사변에 집에 봉투고 말아 근데 사실에 근데 돈이 그게 제가 당장 주지 생 공부를 할 때는 녀모가 사변에 집에 공부 녀모 때다 때 사변에 집에 공부 해서 레벨 공부하스 레버 공부를 되게 쉬리브 공부를 쳐가지고 하고 댕구유스 레버 공부하스
So, Sugata, which is, you know, Su is the bliss, Gata is gone to bliss. You have a state of going to bliss of, of because of the abandonment. Based on your abandonment, then you have the going to a state of bliss of because of the abandonment, and then you have a going to a state of bliss because of your realizations. So, the state of going to bliss on the basis of abandonment and on the basis of realizations all have these three characteristics to it. You know, with regards to the state of going to bliss because of the abandonment, you have these three characteristics of having well abandoned, abandoned without any, without exception, and irreversibly abandoned. So, in the case of some of the other non-Buddhist schools. When they abandon delusions, they only abandon delusions at a gross manifest level. They are unable to abandon it from its very roots, from its very seeds. Whereas in the case of the here in this case, then because of the wisdom realizing emptiness, because of the wisdom realizing emptiness, and because of bodhicitta, they are able to abandon not only the delusions themselves, but afflictions themselves, but also the very seeds of these delusions. So, in that scope, we say, the state of going to bliss because of that abandonment is a case of an abandonment which is well abandoned. Excellently abandoned.
La mudu ba pumba. 어디 주저다 상황 그 주지 공부를 잡아서 봐 봤어요 말이지. 주도 주가다 내지 좀 와서 간다 내려고 와. 팀에 있던 주저다 상황도 좀 말로 봐 봐다 내지는 이제 코알 좀 내도 그러고 코알이 이제 다 두고 다 두고 공부를 해서 사진도 도주지 공부를 코알이 이제 저 내가 매당 삼도 공부해서
So, referring to the Buddhas as a Sugata, gone to bliss, because of the abandonment, which has these three factors. The third being, abandoning, so that it is abandoned in an irreversible way. This is to show that in the case of a fully enlightened Buddha, then their way of abandonment is different from the way the Hinayana arhats abandon. You see, in the case of the Hinayana, in the case of the Hinayana arhats, you have the stream enter, and once returner like that. So, at these levels, they are. At this level, this kind of abandonment cannot be categorized as a kind of abandonment, irreversible abandonment. So, in the case of a Buddha's abandonment, the state of going to bliss because of the abandonment in an irreversible way is different from, is at a totally different higher level to the arhant's way of abandonment. So, well abandoned or excellently abandoned is to differentiate the kind of abandonment that is accomplished in the case of a Buddhist and non-Buddhist. And, abandoning in an irreversible way is to differentiate the kind of abandonment accomplished by a Buddha and accomplished by an arhant.
Dottan maruba bomba zadi timi da du mori bomba le chaba da baba tem bayis timi da du ga du ni bomba ma tu nomo ga de shi di ba maruba bomba ma shi di ma mori ma bomba le sro ha sanji du du bomba de ge shi di bomba sa ba yisa maruba bomba timi da du ga bomba le chaba da baba tem bayis
and the third type of abandonment this is abandoning without exception is to differentiate, the kind of abandonment that a Buddha differentiate between the Buddha's abandonment and an arhant's abandonment. In the case of an arhant, you abandon only the obscuration of delusions, and so you have no abandonment without exception. In the case of the fully Sugatas, the ones gone to bliss, in the case of the Buddhas, because they have abandoned both the obscuration of delusion and obscuration of knowledge or omniscience, obscuration to omniscience. So you attribute a Buddha's abandonment as an abandonment which is total, without exception.
Then I did tell you to chamber the answer. Leva chamba, chamba temba, ma leva chambas, or something like doa. Leva chamba, chamba temba, ma leva chambas, leva chamba, then you know, no more soon the chamba is not leva chamba. Chamba temba, now never is not chamba temba. And ma leva chamba, tangi chamba. What did you do?
Why a Buddha's realizations also have these three characteristics. Just like the Buddha's abandonments have these characteristics, then Buddha's realizations also have these three characteristics of, excellent or good realizations, reliable realizations, and as well as a realization of all that which is without exception. When we talk about Buddha's realization, which is excellent, which is good, it's because of the direct realization of the Four Noble Truths. And when we talk about their realization being reliable, is that there is no degeneration in that realization. And that a Buddha's realization is a realization which knows all without exception, is that you're referring to the holy mind as a mind that knows everything.
What this is that the tama gojyu de tama jo rula de jo tama dije jo la sha lo dije de no no dago do ke ba gojyu sung de dago do 아니 차반나 대다 차마크주 차마크주 단자서 소기 시 같은다고 돌아.
So
the 차마주로 놀아내지 봐. 좀 받듯이 뛰어가 사서 단데 뒤에 주지 보면서 포즈 준다고 돌아.
So the explanation of what the Sugata means, you know, the many ways in which the term Sugata, gone to bliss, is explained in the texts like Pramanavartika, you know, explaining the Pramavalic negative states of mind, and Tamakuntu means, you know, the compendium of knowledge. All of them, you know, is explain what Sugata means in a similar way.
That this is Juju Gunga. Sejit, Shayukula could be shattered. Shattered, Roka, Kardin Shattered was in Shatterina, so much of a Sabbath. So much of a Sabbathina, and the Sudu never got on Tatu to the Nemo, Pachimabo, and then Behmet Gulum is. So no Nami did the net, she said. So not there will be someone else. So not the Abbasabina, so not Nami Joy over there. Dunga Katuri, Suno Nami Dutter, Dunga Nasi, Suno Demi Misaman, I suppose. Suno Chiba Yvaina, and the Kunsava Karyavaina, he does not do him with this, or the Kuba the Lichi.
Again, you can say, what is the purpose of undertaking, you know, a verse of prostration, a verse of, you know, offering of our, you know, homage and reverence? It's because prostration enables us to accumulate the merit. And when we are blessed with the merit, then we are able to fulfill whatever we wish here and now and in the future, both temporary and ultimate purposes are all accomplished if one has the blessings of merit. And so not only that, then whatever obstacles or hindrances are there in one's life, they are all, you know, removed by the power of one's merit, and all of one's wishes are spontaneously fulfilled. You see, it is virtue. It is the merit of our virtue which stops all our suffering and problems in life, and it is the merit of our virtue which enables the fulfillment of all our wishes. So one needs the blessings of a lot of merit to have everything fulfilled for oneself. This part that Kesuchi is explaining actually doesn't go together with the way it's like in the Tibetan writing. It's having, it goes like the last line of the first verse goes, having prostrated, then it says like what I'm going to do, but in the translation it doesn't show, because it's just like, you know, worthy of veneration. It stops that, you know. But in the Tibetan it says, having prostrated, then, you know, it explains what I'm going to do. Right? But so, anyway, it's just the way the words are.
So
So it says, having prostrated, I will now explain how to engage in the vows of a bodhisattva's son, the meaning of which I've condensed in accordance with the scriptures. So, it is going to be a condensation of the all the words of the Buddha that he ever taught in the context of the sutra and tantra, in the context of the individual vehicle, and in the context of the universal vehicle of the Mayana, in the context of the practices of the individuals of the smallest, middling, or highest capacity. To suit all this, then I will condense in few words, all the subject matter relating to all of these things.
Deshe seche dola gyoba dhe, nonji dhudyu nede gyoba shas, nonji dhudyu nede gyoba shas. Ta dhene gajoba re, dhene, dhene chonon gete, deshe kere se gyoya dhudyu nalwa ta, chonon gete sun gogo mudwa dhe, sanji dhu sun sakde, mungro dhu sun sakde, sama dhu sun sakde, dhene chonon gargi dhu sun gosde, gyoba mudwa sa, gyoba ina, ata gyoba yoba re, sanji dhu sun ta, mungro dhu sun dhu sun sakde,
So it says that if you have the question thinking that if all of this has already been explained in the scriptures by the Buddha, by Nagarjuna, then why do you need to explain it all again? Since all the great Indian masters have already done that. And then the author says the answer to that is, there is a need for that, because the way the Buddha's explained and the way the great Indian masters like Nagarjuna has explained, it's too hard for our mind to grasp. And so I will make it even more comprehensive and present it in a way it is easy to understand and practice. So in the case of many of these compositions or in the case of many of the writings, you have the homage, and the second verse often is a verse of the pledge to the pledge, which is to firmly commit themselves to that writing. Why do you have this particular verse of the pledge? Is that to ensure the completion of the work? They make a statement of such a pledge, of such a commitment. In the case of holy beings or perfectly holy beings, they take on a few responsibilities. But when they do take the responsibility for it, you can be assured that they will fulfill it. Which means, unlike ordinary beings, you take so many responsibilities but never fulfill like that. It's like to differentiate. It says like holy beings, then their responsibility is guaranteed, written like a carving on a stone. It's there firmly there. There's no change in their commitment until it is fulfilled.
Oh, ona goba kare chidinsina rangi yila gonse ngende tangs ana marungle sanju ge sen nabani lu jomba te gonne gonbi gonne gonbi ve chedo ana mejulu tuis odizo mata
and verse number 2 is a verse in which to counteract any kind of self-importance or pride in the composition, in the writing, and also to, you know, to denote an extreme case of humility. You know, you have this verse. There is nothing here that has not been explained before. You know, which is a line of contrasting pride, self-importance, and I have no skill in the art of rhetoric, you know, like that, the extreme humility. Therefore, lacking any intention to benefit others, saying that, you know, that I have no skill of benefit, but the reason for which I write it is only to familiarize my own mind with the two bodhicittas and to enhance my mind, develop my mind in these two bodhicittas. It's the only reason for writing it. I write this in order to acquaint it to my mind. So in many of the great writings of the ancient masters, you often have this, you know, when they at the beginning of their writing, you have very similar kinds just like how it is said, there's nothing here that I do not. Similar kinds, like even when you study Pramanavartika, which is one of the most eminent texts, within that it says, like, you know, I'm still so consumed in my worldly affairs, and I still lack the interest in that which is most excellent, and still torn by jealousy and so forth, like this, yet I undertake this writing, and so for those who have the characteristics of the three faults of a container, then may find some benefit in this. But for those who do not have the faults of a container, then I might not find benefit in these, like that. Although the subject material that they write on is so very profound, but at the beginning of the text, they often write lines like that. The next verse says, for due to acquaintance with what is wholesome, the force of my faith may for a short while increase. Because of these words, if however these words are seen by others equal in fortune to myself, it may be meaningful for them. So it's a verse in which taking enthusiasm, rejoicing in the activity of such a composition, you know, for these reasons that, you know, if people are as fortunate, you know, of like mind, may appreciate, you know, what is written here. And then the fourth stanza onwards begins with the actual subject matter. So we'll stop here and do question and answer.
Okay. It would seem that a Buddha would have to, at the time of enlightenment, would remove both types of obscuration simultaneously. Is that correct?
Sangye be nekapsu sangye 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 ni sangye dige nyonje da shede ni cha chik cha to pangwa re sa.
What the job you have to do?
Good question.
That's one more time you were an answer. One more time you were an answer. Nenju shi go ma na ju go chi go du. Nenju shi go ma na ju go shan ta ra chi ta ro. Sandra, Timmy was Bonsabro, Timmy Dadumarwa. That could Dadu Totane and Tisan Tonon Volant and Eleven Music Marium.
Shetapan.
That's not true to send to the combustion, combustion, and then said the wrong duty and Tonon Tonon Volant and the Wizard. That's how Jeva Badruko over the top of Tatamatu, Shadow Shun and Polygar Marwa. That's how Jeva ne.
So, I, according to the different philosophical schools, you have, you know, Prasangika Madhyamikas and Yogacharya Svatantrika Madhyamikas and Chittamatra and Svatantrika Madhyamikas. So, you have different schools' way of saying what gets abandoned when, from different schools' viewpoint. So if you take from the high school's viewpoint, then Prasangika, Madhyamika Prasangika system, then they say that if an individual first enters into the, you know, the individual vehicle, Hinayana vehicle, and so Hinayana vehicle, you have the five parts of accumulation of merit, preparation, thing. So as they progress along this path, then, you know, at the end of the, you know, path of no more learning, you become an arhat. So during this phase, you abandon all the obscuration of delusions. And then after that state of an arhat, if this arhat were to engage into the Mahayana vehicle, they would again engage into the Mahayana vehicle of the path, the five Mahayana paths. During that, you know, their wisdom does not need to include, does not need to abandon any kind of delusions. But during that phase, what they are cultivating is bodhicitta. You know, so so then, as explained before, that, you know, you when you you know, and then after they reach the eighth bhumi, you know, which is like the path of meditation or something like that, then around that, then only with the force of that bodhicitta that is strengthened all this time, then you get to work on abandoning the obscuration to omniscience, obscuration knowledge. So that is how it happens.
Sajibi kosu nyeri pungu dhaju kutukuris. Sajibi kwa la tumata la zaji nyuwasi yujiniz. Sajibi kosu nyeri pungu taba tukuris. Tene sajibi tene shiri pungu kuzo marga. Sajibi kuba, juba patula. Ni shiri pungu ne, juba, jubi tale shiri pungu sa di sanjini marga.
And then if you take an individual who doesn't start off with the Hinayana vehicle, but from the very beginning engages in the Mahayana vehicle, then you can say that it is on the eighth bhumi. We talked about on the path of meditation, when you reach the eighth bhumi, that is when you abandon all of your delusions and you become a Mahayana arhant. And then eight from the ninth and up to tenth, then at the tenth bhumi, that is when you abandon the obscuration to knowledge. And then after you abandon that, then you become enlightened.
That's how Jiva goes in your deep bungalows, that number is teaching the Dajum Mahilamuris, that number he, Shantu Sandra Dajum was mother, teaching the Dajum, teaching the Dajum was Haji Chalam mother.
Kandesi and Jokin and the Dajum Bayes, teaching
Kunya Debotarwa, Dajumarwa, teaching the Dajum Mahis, teaching the Dajum in the Shiri Bungalows.
In the Kinsman just said that in the way we say it, you know, when on the minor path, an individual on the eighth bhumi, when they abandon, you know, the obscuration of delusions, they become an arhant. But Kinsman says you cannot say they become a Mahayana arhant, because a Mahayana arhant is a Buddha.
That the net Nenju Shiromana Juba, Yanda Rasidarva, Nenju Shiromana Juba, the new did the city in Jijat Pond is Sanji Gumato Juba, the new Ponto, New Poma, you did city Jijat Pond is in the new Mamuba in the new did not to my is Hansam, Hansi, two doubles. Two sets of Hina, the name Hansam, Han to Nia, to University at you. And two sides of a young hands away in my young, two members of his work. Then I, how much it was
according to the, you know, Yogacharya Swatantaka Madhyamaka system, you know, like Shantaru Akshita is like also someone who follows that particular system. According to them, they say that the both of the two obscurations are abandoned simultaneously. That is how they hold. And they said that even though, you know, even though the reason behind that is that they said that even though obscuration of delusions have not been abandoned, yet it is not able to harm you. The reason why is because they say it is like at that phase, you know, the obscuration of delusion is like a poison to which you have applied the antidote of a mantra or medicine. You know, there are some poisons rendered ineffective by the use of certain mantras, or you know, some poisons rendered ineffective because you take a medication for it. And so you have the poison, but it's not able to harm you because its effects have been counteracted by mantra or medicine. So according to this Yogacharya, you know, Swatantra Madhyamik system, they say that even though you haven't abandoned the obscuration of delusions, it is not able to harm you because you have rendered them ineffective. So according to this school, then they say, you know, both of the two obscurations are abandoned simultaneously, and even though you know, even though the obscuration of delusions has not been abandoned at the phase of abandoning and the delusion of at the phase of abandoning the obscuration to omniscience or obscuration to knowledge, yet those obscuration of delusions, you know, are you know, cannot harm you because they have been rendered ineffective with medicine and mantra, like a poison rendered ineffective by medicine and mantra. So that's how they say. also like that, there are, you know, in the presentation of what gets to be abandoned, realized, in accordance to the different philosophical schools of thought, there's slight differences. And each one have their reasons for whatever it is.
Yesterday, Rinpoche, you talked about not being able to attain enlightenment for bodhicitta alone, and talked quite a bit at the end about needing to train in the perfection of wisdom. And yet today, a lot of the discussion was between relative conventional bodhicitta and ultimate bodhicitta. Is that the distinction in the terminology of bodhicitta not being enough, of being between ultimate and conventional bodhicitta?
When we talk about the term ultimate bodhicitta, it's not bodhicitta. It is referring to the wisdom realizing emptiness. It is given that name as an ultimate or absolute bodhicitta, but it's not bodhicitta. When we talk about the ultimate bodhicitta, the mind which realizes ultimate bodhicitta, then is a mind which exists on the minor path of seeing, minor path of meditation, and minor path of normal learning. You know, on the minor path of accumulation and preparation, there is no ultimate bodhicitta. Because you have conventional bodhicitta then, but you do not have ultimate bodhicitta. In that way, you know, on the Hinayana path of seeing, meditation, and normal learning, you do not have ultimate bodhicitta. You do not have ultimate bodhicitta. So this ultimate bodhicitta is a. It has to be a mind which has the direct realization of emptiness, and where it has gotten rid of the view of duality, completely gotten rid of the view of duality. What it means having a free of duality, means it has no conventional appearances at all. Apart from emptiness, it has no appearances, that mind has no appearances of conventional realities or truths. So you can say the ultimate bodhicitta, the ultimate bodhicitta mind is a Mahayana, it is a Mahayana mental consciousness, classed. Again, the Tsini Tiang just a Techen Pape Kiki So Yigi Namre.
What
does one Techen Shirub
Shirub Shirub
Torus Neba. So, what is this ultimate bodhicitta mind? It is a ultimate bodhicitta mind is a principle mental consciousness of an Arya Mahayana, means Arya Bodhisattva, a mental consciousness which abides in the class of being a wisdom consciousness. Realization of a wisdom consciousness. I don't know how best to say this. So when we talk about ultimate bodhicitta mind, then it is the cause which gives rise to the full and complete state of Buddhahood, which means it is a mind which arises through having listened to manifold teachings from many virtuous friends, many teachers, and then it requires the basis of the first countless eon of the accumulation of merit, so in the of the five paths, then you have the path of accumulation and path of preparation during which you complete the first countless eons accumulation of merit. And then you have during the 10 bhumis, you have the first 7 impure bhumis, impure grounds. During that phase, you accumulate the second countless eons accumulation of merit, and then on the last 3 pure grounds, you complete the third countless eons accumulation of merit to become enlightened. When in the context of accumulating 3 countless eons of merit to become enlightened. So the ultimate bodhicitta requires the foundation of having already completed the first countless eons accumulation of merit, and becoming a direct cause for the full and complete enlightenment, enabled by having listened to manifold teachings from many virtuous friends and I. And you know, it is a mind which you know, which is totally free of conceptuality. You know, Dōpa dan tewe. It is a non-conceptual mind. When it is a non-conceptual mind, meaning free of conceptual thoughts, then this mind has to be a direct perception. And so, you know, what so it is an exalted mind, directly realizing emptiness. So, you know, that is what you know, absolute bodhicitta is about. So this is how Maitreya describes ultimate bodhicitta in the jewel ornament of the sutras, Sutra Alamkara. So based on Maitreya's explanation in the defining characteristics of bodhicitta and conventional bodhicitta and ultimate bodhicitta, then when you study the perfections, they use the same definition as what is taught by Maitreya. So. When you study the 7-point instructions on cause and effect, then you know, usually they teach the ultimate bodhicitta first, and then they teach the conventional bodhicitta later. And when you study the 8 verses of thought training, they teach the conventional bodhicitta first and the ultimate bodhicitta last. And in the Guide to a Bodhisattva's Way of Life, you have the conventional bodhicitta first and the ultimate bodhicitta later in the 8th and the 9th chapters. So. Do you want me to ask a question now? Tomorrow.
May the spiritual teachers who lead me on the sacred path, and all spiritual friends who practice it as one. May I satisfy completely all other hindrances, grant us inspiration, I pray. May the lives of the venerable generously, may you stay until some of explaining and practicing the Dharma. Down by groups supporting the teachings and their upholders, who spread the view of dependent arriving and nonviolent actions in the 10 directions, and especially at Travasti Abbey in the West. Oh.